You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
In 1952, I arrived in New York for the first time, and naturally made for Broadway. And by one of those coincidences, which you can never account for, the first name I saw on any marquee was Johnny Mercer's. Of course, I knew he was a songwriter, but in those days, I was only really interested in people like Rodgers and Hart and the Gershwin Brothers. And it certainly never occurred to me that one day I'd get to know the man or make a close study of his works. But I do remember I decided to see the show. After all, it was a musical and I was a musician. But it was sold out for weeks and I was only in New York for a few hours. The star of that show was Phil Silvers. It was called Top Banana. One of those obscure American expressions which would take hours to explain, but I think has something to do with an old vaudeville routine. What was really fascinating was that Mercer had written the music as well as the words. When I asked Mercer years later how come he'd written the music as well as the words, he told me that the producers kept promising to sign up a composer, but they took so long that Mercer got bored waiting and decided to write the whole thing himself.
We had a lot of funny things in the show. We had a singing dog in the show. Phil would start to sing and the dog would sing. And it was funny. We had a lot of things like that in the show. And we had elevator operators singing songs and, well, I can't tell you how many funny things it was. But we didn't have any hit songs.
In fact, this was the time around which there later grew up a legend that Mercer's hits had all dried up. Now, the facts contradict this most emphatically. What I think did happen was that for a while, Mercer wasn't involved in any lengthy collaboration with any one of the great composing names. But he was still pulling all sorts of rabbits out of the hat.
Autumn Leaves is a big song in Europe called La Feuille Morte, which means the dead leaves, written by a fellow named Cosma, K-O-S-M-A. I think he's a Belgian, or he might have been some province of France. Well, he's since dead, but it was given to me by a publisher. Sometimes that happens. I was glad to get it, a beautiful melody. I didn't have too much trouble writing it. As a matter of fact, the publisher came by, wanted to know if I had finished it. I said, no, I was going to New York at 5 o'clock on the train. He said, can I ride you to the station then? He wanted this lyric, and I said, yeah. He said, you can write it on the way down. So I did. I wrote the lyric on the way down to the station. I wrote it in longhand and gave it to the publisher. It's just a great tune. I think I could have written anything to it, and it would have been a hit.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips, the summer kisses, the sunburned hands I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear song. But I miss you most of all, my darling. When
the significant fact about that song is the way Mercer asked for a literal translation of the words. He had no French. Mercer's French collaborators in the early 1950s were surprising enough. But in 1953, in an episode not widely known, the French gave way to the Russians. to a long-dead ex-Marine called Rimsky-Korsakov. Presumably, the astonishing Mercer wrote this one on an impulse with no particular occasion in mind. But whoever hears it is stopped up short by the sheer, isolated brilliance of the episode. The stopped shorters include Mel Torme.
I was riding around in the car one day, I'll never forget this, and I had the FM band on, and a guy came on the radio and said, "We would now like to play the Mario Lanza record of Song of India." Lanza came on and incidentally acquitted himself beautifully, did a beautiful job. "I'd like you to hear this lyric. And still the snowy Himalayas rise in ancient majesty before our eyes. Beyond the plains, above the pines, while through the ever, never-changing land, as silently as any native band that moves at night, the Ganges shines. Then I hear the song that only India can sing, softer than the plumage on a black raven's wing. High upon a minaret I stand and gaze across the desert sand upon an old enchanted land. There's the Maharaja's caravan unfolding like a painted fan. How small the little race of man." Incidentally, I must tell you how I found out that John wrote that. I virtually drove the car to a public telephone and called the station and said, "I've just got to know who wrote that lyric." And was not particularly stunned, but was delighted to find that the writer was Johnny Mercer.
The only song in existence written by the partnership of Johnny Mercer and Rimsky-Korsakov. The year was 1953. A very busy one for Mercer, whose partnership with the songwriter Gene DePaul was about to score a very famous success.
It came about from a short story by Stephen Vincent Benet, one of my absolute favorite poets and writers of all time. He wrote a lot of great short stories, a lot of poems. Now, I didn't like this particular story much. I thought it was irreverent and not as adventuresome as the critics and the public seemed to think later on. So when I was asked if I'd like to do a score to it, I said, no, I really wasn't interested. And Jack Cummings produced it at Metro. He said, "Well, wait a minute." He said, "You'd be just right for it." He says, "We got the Hacketts." So I said, "Well, if they're going to do it, I'll reconsider, because they're fine writers. Francis and Albert Hackett, they're wonderful." And they liked it, and we tried to iron out our differences, which was small. I didn't like the word Pontopee for the brothers. I thought, that's a hokey name, Pontopee. Well, anyway, there were lots of little things like that, and I didn't think it was typically Western. I thought it was kind of dragging it in by the heels. But Gene and I set out to do it, and it just worked out fine. It came fast. We never had any hits, but the dancing is what made that picture, though.
The next picture Mercer was involved in, again, had no big hits and is remembered not only for his dancing, but for the cleverness with which the camera recreates the effect of a cartoon. Because that's what the original was, a cartoon, one of America's most famous. But in this movie, an adaptation of Mercer's success with it on Broadway, there's one song which rattles a few of the skeletons in the Mercer family closet. He had had a grandfather who was a colonel in the Confederate Army, and an earlier ancestor who had actually been a brigadier general on George Washington's staff. So Johnny Mercer knew all about the military, and he knew as well about the obstinacy of the South when it came to admitting defeat.
"Come here, Zsa Zsa. Zsa Zsa, honey, it's high time you knew that our town was founded by that beloved man, a setting up there on that beloved horse, Jubilation T. Corn Pone, the greatest fighting general, a military strategist, a Confederacy ever knew. And all over the countryside, there's monuments commemorating the names of his famous battles. Corn Pone's disaster, Corn Pone's misjudgment, Corn Pone's catastrophe, and Corn Pone's humiliation. When we fought the Yankees and annihilation was near, who was there to lead the charge that took us safe to the rear? Why, it was Jubilation T. Corn Pone. Old toot your own horn, Pone. Jubilation T. Corn Pone. A man who knew no fear. When we almost had him, but the issue still was in doubt. Who suggested the retreat that turned it into a rout? Why, it was
Jubilation T. Corn Pone.
T-Rex. Old tattered and torn, Pone. Jubilation T. Corn Pone. He kept us hiding out. With our ammunition gone and faced with utter defeat, who was it that burned the crops and left us nothing to eat. Why, it was Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, old September morn pone. Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, the pants blown off his seat. Hooray! When it seemed like our brave boys might keep on fighting for months, who took pity on them and capitulated at once? Why, it was Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, unshaven and shorn pone. Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, he weren't nobody's dunce. Why, it was Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, unshaven and shorn pone. Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, he weren't nobody's dunce. History says that General Grant was pretty good with a jug, who drank drink for drink with him and wound up under the rug. Why, it was Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, passed out until morn pone. Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, his whiskers in his mug. Hearing that a northern spy had come to town for a night, who gained entrance to her rooms and lost a glorious fight. Why, it was Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, old weary and worn pone. Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, he fought all through the night. At Appomattox, Lee and Grant were present, of course, as Lee swept a tear away, who swept the back of his horse. Why, it was Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, foot sore and forlorn pone. Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, a picture of remorse. Why, it was Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, completely outworn pone. Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, he really saved the day.
If the score of Little Abner produced pearls of that kind without leaving a hit, one of the other Mercer projects in the 1950s made up for it. Daddy Longlegs was one of those sentimental tales about the mature guardian of a young girl who ends up marrying her. Again, there was no composer for Mercer to work with. He wrote his own music to his own words. And one performer who was eternally grateful for it was the star of the picture.
I'm indeed proud of the fact that he wrote quite a number of songs, especially for me to sing originally in several of my pictures, particularly one for my baby and one for the road in Sky's the Limit, and Something's Got to Give in Daddy Long Legs.
When an irresistible force such as you meets an old, immovable object like me, you can bet as sure as you live, something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give. When an irrepressible smile such as yours forms an old, implacable heart such as mine, don't say no, because I insist, somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna be kissed. So on guard, who knows what the fates have in store, from their vast mysterious sky. I'll try hard, ignoring those lips I adore. But how long can anyone try? Fight, 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 fight it with all of our might. Chances are some heavenly star-spangled night we'll find out as sure as we live. Fight, 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 fight it with all of our might.
best-known song from Daddy Long Legs, but not quite, I think, the best song in the picture. The day of Daddy Long Legs was 1954, but in the soundtrack, Mercer planted something he'd written, words and music again, as far back as 1933, when the success of Lazy Bones was just beginning to get him really going. I once asked Mercer about this song, and he modestly dismissed it. And these are his very words. Well, it's sort of whispering sideways, meaning that the structure of the song was really a repeat of the old one, Whispering.
Yeah, well, Dream was a tune that I'd fooled around with at home, and I had kind of picked up most of the chords on the piano, and the radio program came along at the right time. I used it as a theme song. And when I got the radio program, when I knew it was going to be the Chesterfield show, I put the thing about smoke rings in. But the song was always called Dream, and it was always that kind of a tune. It's sort of whispering sideways. Well, you sing it and see.
Get in touch with that sundown fellow as he tiptoes across the sand. He's got a million kinds of stardust. Pick your favorite brand and dream when you're feeling blue. Dream, that's the thing to do. Just watch the smoke rings rising.
The several virtues of that song is that it's tailor-made for jazz musicians to improvise to. And that's no surprise, because Whispering, its direct ancestor, was one of the most popular songs put to that purpose in the 1920s and 30s. Mercer was always very proud of the fact that he'd worked in the big bands and hung around with the great musicians like the Tea Garden Brothers. The experience left him with an affinity for jazz and jazz musicians, which was really responsible for a lot of his hit songs. Whenever the jazz world needed a lyricist, it was always Mercer they turned to first. But occasionally, it worked the other way round.
I was driving back from the beach and I heard Lionel Hampton's record, and it was already called Midnight Sun. It had no words, but it had a great tune. At least I thought so. And I really think Midnight Sun is an obligato to Early Autumn, if you really want to know. And he was playing one night and then he started playing... Do dee be doo be doo be doo be dee ba do ba ba da 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 dee doo, like a xylophone chorus. However that may be, I thought it was great. And by the time I got from Newport Beach to Los Angeles, which is 50-some-odd miles, I had most of that lyric finished. So I found out who published it, who wrote it, and I sent him a letter that day or a wire, and I said, would you be interested in a lyric for this melody? I got the answer back. Yes, we would like to have your lyric. So I mailed it in about 2 days before Steve Allen mailed in another lyric.
Your lips were like a red and ruby chalice, warmer than the summer night. The clouds were like an alabaster palace, rising to a snowy height. Each star its own aurora borealis. Suddenly you held me tight. I could see the midnight sun. I can't explain the silver rain that found me, or was that a of the universe around me, or was that a nightingale? And then your arms miraculously found me. Suddenly the sky turned pale. I could see the midnight sun. Was there such a night? It's a thrill I still don't quite believe. But after you were gone, there was still some stardust on my sleeve. The flame of it may dwindle to an ember, and the stars forget to shine. The meadow in December, I see white and crystalline. But oh, my darling, always I'll remember when your lips were close to mine, and we saw the midnight sun, the midnight sun.
The popular picture of the songwriter as a man who would do anything to get a hit does not always apply. It certainly wasn't true of Mercer, who was rather concerned about what people might be doing to his work. Some of his contemporaries were the same. I once heard his old partner Harry Warren castigating a pair of latter-day recording idols who had taken one of his 1930s hits and put it into the hit parade, but at what terrible cost? Mercer was the same. Back in 1941, he'd collaborated with a very talented Hollywood studio musical director called Victor Schertzinger. Now, Schertzinger was also an occasional songwriter with a marvellous melodic flair. Dream Lover, Sand in My Shoes, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, that was a sample of what he could do. In 1941, Mercer and Schertzinger worked together on a movie called The Fleet's Inn, and the singer with the Jimmy Dorsey Band, which was featured in the picture, Bob Everly, had sung a Mercer-Schertzinger song that came to mean something very special for Mercer. He once told me that if he had to pick a few lines from his output that represented his best work, he thought it would be the last lines of a song from the Fleet's Inn called I Remember You. And these are the lines. When my life is through and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of them all, then I will tell them I remember you. I make that point to stress how much the song meant to Mercer personally. Years after it was forgotten, a popular idol found it and made it a success all over again. Mercer was disenchanted by the whole business.
Well, if I'd been the composer, I'd have sued him. They say you can't knock a hit, and it did sell a lot of records, and it was a big hit in America, too, but it's not I Remember You, as far as I'm concerned. It's a different song. It's like a hillbilly singing it. He sings falsetto, and he changes the chords. Well, I mean, who needs that?
Was it in Tahiti? Were we on the Nile? Long, long ago, say an hour ago, I recall that I saw your smile. I remember you. You're the one who made my dreams come true. A few kisses ago, didn't you know? I remember too a distant bell and stars that fell like rain out of the blue. Life is through, and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of them all. Then I shall tell them I remember.
I Remember You as it really is supposed to be sung. The voice was Ella Fitzgerald's. Of course, when it came to vocal recordings of his own work, Mercer was in the unique position of being better at that sort of thing than almost anybody. Had he not been one of the great songwriters, he would have received much more recognition for what he also was, one of the great singers. And although it takes things a little bit out of chronological order, it might be a good moment to look at one of the outstanding vocal albums of the 1960s. In fact, an album so outstanding that in the years since, it's become a kind of collector's item, being reissued and sold out, and then reissued and sold out again. In 1963, Mercer formed an improbable alliance with a member of the younger generation of singers, Bobby Darin.
He's younger than I was, and he didn't know a lot of those songs, so I submitted a lot of songs to him that had been hits when I was a kid. He loved that, Who Takes Care of the Caretaker's Daughter, so we wrote some extra choruses in which he could do his imitations, especially the one where he does Elvis, who rolls rocks with the rock and roller's daughter while the rock and roller's busy rolling rocks.
Who takes care of the caretaker's daughter while the caretaker's busy taking care?
Careful!
Gee, oh gosh, oh gee. That's really what worries me.
I see.
I know the caretaker, he must take care while he's taking care. She's alone somewhere. But who takes care of the caretaker's daughter while the caretaker's busy taking care? Brother John?
Who makes time with the timekeeper's daughter while the timekeeper's busy keeping time?
Don't ask me.
Who makes every scene while he's winding his Longines.
I have no idea.
You know that the timekeeper must keep time, and someone's gotta make her tick-tock chime. So who makes time with the timekeeper's daughter while the timekeeper's busy keeping time?
Who gets tents with the tents maker's daughter while the tent maker's busy making tents? Of course, I'm talking about Omar Khayyam.
Yeah, well, that's exactly who I am.
Didn't recognize you without your shirt on. And you know Papa Khayyam, he must make tents while he's making tents. Tell me who's making tents.
Yes, who gets tents with the tent maker's daughter while the tent maker's busy making tents?
Rocks for the rock roller's daughter while the rock roller's busy rolling rocks. Just a twang in his guitar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And being most rectangular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now we know that the rock roller must roll rocks, but while he's rocking and rolling, who supplies her yachts? Who rolls rocks for the rock roller's daughter while the rock roller's busy rolling rocks?
House with the housekeeper's daughter while the housekeeper's busy keeping house.
I'm usually out myself. I know they can't afford a maid.
Mm-mm.
And they can't call up the lady's aid.
Yes, but you know that the housekeeper must keep house.
And that child ain't busy reading Mickey Mouse.
So who keeps house with the housekeeper's daughter while the housekeeper's busy keeping house?
I mean, while the rock rolling, busy rolling rocks.
Yes, sir.
While the caretaker's busy taking care.
The album was called Two of a Kind for obvious reasons. And yet again, the lyrics absolutely fizz and glitter, with jokes and verbal ingenuities using everything from mispronunciation to dialect jokes to show business vernacular to tell the story.
Two of a kind. Your information, we're two of a kind.
Two of a kind. It's my observation, we're two of a kind.
Like peas in a pod
and birds of a feather, alone or together you'll find that we are two of a kind. What's so wrong thinking life is a song and reaching for a star?
Who's to say if we'll go the whole way? At least we got this far.
Sharing our lot, our vittles and viands, we're two of an ilk.
Say, what if we've got rare Chateaubriands or crackers and milk?
Making it plain,
explaining it fully,
we're similarly inclined, because we're two of a kind. Two of a kind. When he's out of rhythm, I'm singing off key.
I never heard you do that, John. Say never you mind, 'cause I'm sticking with him to see above sea.
He's a for me, oh, need we explain? When he warbles sweetly, I'm flat and completely behind, because we're two of a kind. I get kicks when I meet the cute chicks who hang around this lad.
And especially when they whisper to me, hey, honey, who's your dad?
Two of a sort,
like two pomegranates from off the same tree.
I'm with you, sport. Whatever you plan, it's a ghost double with me.
It's a ghost double with you, huh?
Yeah.
I got a terrible thought.
Most frightfully upsetting, and yet we are getting resigned to being two of a kind. We're two of a kind.
We like working single
or working in twos.
Keep us in mind. Give us a jingle, and we got taps on our shoes.
We'll dance. We're both of us like the Tower of Pisa.
I'm a leaner like a Hisa inclined.
Because we're two of a kind.
Because we're two of a kind.
The Johnny Mercer collaboration with Bobby Darin surprised us all. But then, I think Mercer was always likely to surprise you because he had such an open mind. That's not so common a thing as it sounds. For all his legendary fame, Mercer was ready to work with anybody, anywhere. Which meant that every so often, some bizarre combination of circumstances with a perfect stranger resulted in an unexpected success. Regarding this next episode, even Mercer himself defined it, quote, as a wild thing.
A little lady in Youngstown, Ohio. She sent me that title in a letter. I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. And I thought, wow, that's a whole song. You don't have to do anything but write a few notes to that. Because that's a real hit title in my estimation. Because I've been writing popular songs for a long time. So I wrote her and I said, dear Miss Wimmerstedt, that was her name, I like your title. If I get a chance in the next year or so, I'll write it up. And I got some time off within that year, and I wrote it, and my wife took it down to Las Vegas to submit it to Edie Gourmet. And she turned it down. Later she did it, but she turned it down that time, and then we took it to Tony Bennett, and it was just at the time when he was looking for a follow-up to San Francisco. Well, this wasn't like that, but it suited him. It was exactly what he wanted. So he made this record of Want to Be Around, and it got to be an enormous hit. So I wrote the lady and told her, you know, I said, here's the song, and we got a record, and, you know, you're a songwriter. So we put it out, and we split it 50-50.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. And that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet, as I sit there applauding from a front row seat. When somebody breaks your heart like you.
For Miss Sadie Wimmerstedt, the originator of that song, there was a postscript, which Mercer one night at a recital in his honor in a New York theater told with great delight.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. I got to tell you about this. A lady sent me this title.
She worked in a cosmetic counter in Youngstown, Ohio. And I finally wrote the song and I told her we had a record by Tony Bennett. Well, she was thrilled. Well, she's the cutest thing. She writes me letters all the time. But she says, "You've changed my life, Mr. Mercer. You just don't know." I said, she began with saying, "People are coming into the store asking for my autograph." And she says, "Next week I have to go on the radio in Cleveland." And 2 weeks later, she says, "I'm going to Cincinnati. I'm going to be on I'm getting to be so famous." Finally, she came to New York, and she was on to Tell the Truth or something. Now she goes to Europe, and she said, "Mr. Mercer, I got to work every day next week getting in." She said, "I'm tired. I'm going to get out of show business." And that's when you'll discover that revenge is sweet. As you sit there applauding from a front row seat, when somebody breaks your heart like you broke mine.
I Want to Be Around, which jumped the sequence there by a year or two, so next week I'll have to backpedal to pick up the final strands of the Johnny Mercer story and two new partners in Henry Mancini and Andre Previn.
That old black magic has me in its spell. That old black magic that you weave so well. I see fingers up and down my spine. Same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine. Same old tingle that I feel inside. And then that elevator starts its ride. Down and down I go, round and round I go, like a leaf that's caught in the tide. I should stay away, but what can I do? I hear your name and I'm aflame. Aflame with such a burning desire that only your kiss can put out the fire. You are the lover I have waited for, the mate that fate had me created for. And every time your lips meet mine, baby, down and down I go, round and round I go, in a spin, loving the spin that I'm in, under that old black magic called love.
That's it. See you same time next week.
You are the lover that I've waited for, the mate that fate had me created for. And every time your lips meet mine, baby, down and down I go, all around I go, in a spin, crazy about the spin I'm in, under that old black magic called love. That old black magic called love. That old black magic call love.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.